like to tell you along with Charlie Long. Steve Geller will join us at 5:45 for our triple option feature. John Harbaugh, after 18 years with the Baltimore Ravens, was released today. 180 wins in 18 seasons. You can do the math real quick there. Won a Super Bowl title for him, 13-11. I was texting with Kelsey Nicole Nelson, who covers both the Commanders and the Ravens. And what she's saying that she understands is that basically Steve Bisciotti, in the meeting with John Harbaugh, wanted major changes on his coaching staff, despite the fact that injury raveled this year. I mean, they were ravaged with injuries throughout the season. And Coach Harbaugh just wanted to kind of tweak it a little bit. And that's where the disagreement laid. And John sort of, I guess, maybe put his foot down, said it's not going to be majors changes here. And Bisciotti and him could not agree upon that. And that's why he is unemployed. But like in the NFL, not for long. He will not stay unemployed, not for long. Just hope, and Charlie, I told you this, I hope somehow, some way he don't end up in Atlanta. That's a pretty, you know, good roster of young people that they have on those Falcons. You don't have a first-round pick, but, they've got a good shell there. And they need somebody who's in charge, somebody who's been there, done that before. John Harbaugh's done that, and I think John will have a host of teams very interested in him to be the head coach with that type of resume.
Mike, it's similar to the Stefanski conversation where obviously it didn't work out with the Browns and the Browns were ready to move on, but he's still a good coach in the NFL. It's just the situation, maybe time kind of wore thin with Harbaugh. 18 years is a long time in the NFL, as you
obviously
know.
In one spot, yeah.
So Adam Schefter had posted just recently, Mike, we're getting development on this by the minute, that he's expected to emerge as the favorite for the head coaching job of the New York Giants. But Schefter did add that he's going to be obviously very highly sought after throughout all the coaching vacancies. Now there's seven. As Bobby always says, six, seven, eight coaches every single year.
Yep.
I think, you know, you kind of alluded to it there, Mike, at the end of last hour. The loser of the Steelers-Ravens game on Sunday Night Football almost felt like one of those two, whether it be Tomlin or Harbaugh, was going to see their time at whatever spot it be come to an end. But at the same time, both of them are very accomplished coaches at the NFL level. They both won a Super Bowl at the NFL level. And either one of them, had they been moved on from by, you know, whether it be the Steelers or the Ravens, it would not take long for either one of them to find a job. I think Harbaugh is going to be pretty quick on the market. Some team's going to lock him down and lock down his services for the foreseeable future. Because like we said, he can still coach, Mike. It's not a question about that. It's just maybe that his time in Baltimore was starting to wear a little thin.
And you heard the Ravens players talk about his relationship with them and how he was like another dad to them. And,
yeah,
and that he could be really stern and really tough on them, but how much they respected that it was a one-on-one type deal with them. A lot of coaches, they don't want to get involved with that, okay? And they want to change their personalities because the fans or the media wants you to change. John Harbaugh never changed, okay? Now, he's different from his brother Jim personality-wise in some areas, but, man, I got a lot of respect for what John Harbaugh did at Baltimore. He was so close a couple times.
Yep.
You know, and then to have Brady and the Patriots make that run while you there. And then all of a sudden, here comes Mahomes, okay, in Kansas City. And, you know, a lot of people as well, he only won one Super Bowl. How many has your coach won?
Exactly. <Okay? laughs>
How many has your coach at your team won? People don't realize how hard it is in this league in 18 years to win 180 games. That is really impressive and what he's been able to do. Nothing against Steve Bisciotti, because I think people don't realize how involved Steve Bisciotti is with the Ravens. And I'm not talking about just ownership. I'm talking about selection of players from draft, free agency. Steve Bisciotti is knee-deep in it. And they have drafted really well over the last few years. I give the Ravens that. They've done a fantastic job of bringing in players yearly, because you're going to lose guys back and forth, but also bringing them in. It's a well-run organization, but the time had kind of come to the end And maybe you need another voice. Here's my thing. When you cut loose Harbaugh, you better have somebody as good or better.
Well, that's the thing,
that's going to be the issue.
And that's what you can see for a couple other coaching situations. Like the stuff with Todd Bowles in the Buccaneers. He hasn't been fired yet. But, you know, many people think he might be moved on from with the Buccaneers finally missing the postseason. The grass is not always greener. And that is what we would warn some of these teams. That's what you should warn the Ravens. I mean, I don't know, man. They better, like you said, they better have someone in mind that's going to be able to hop right in and be successful right off the bat. Because moving on from Harbaugh like you did, where there was an established floor with John Harbaugh, it's kind of a questionable move, in my opinion, Mike.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is I told you this 3 weeks ago. I bet Cliff Kingsbury won't make it till February.
Yeah.
With the Commanders. Sure enough, he's out of there, and he's hunting down a head coaching job or trying to get another head coaching job in the National Football League. A lot of people in this league think highly of Cliff Kingsbury.
Maybe working with a talented young quarterback again, Mike.
Yep, and I think that's what he's looking for. You know, he didn't make it work at Tech. Arizona. That's from ownership down. But, man, what he did in that 1 year with Jaden Daniels, now they had some injuries at the quarterback position. And I thought the Commanders got old, like almost overnight for that football team. But Cliff Kingsbury's out on the market. Man, his agent, man, he's throwing that out all over about teams interested in hiring him. How true all that is, I don't know, but man, his agent, he's kind of pumping the prime, so to speak. When we come back, we'll have on with us Odyssey NFL insider, also NFL on Fox analyst Mark Schlereff, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelier along with Charlie Long. And on our Talk and Text line, we're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereff, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. You can listen to the Stinkin' Truth podcast now on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Mark, thanks for joining us. And, man, you got a lot of content on the podcast for this week.
Yeah, right. There's no question about it. Yeah, and by the way, we just released the Leftovers podcast about the Atlanta Falcons New Orleans game that I called over the weekend. So that just hit on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. You can find it on YouTube if you so desire to listen to, you know, kind of the breakdown of that game. But anyhow, thank you, man, for having me. I appreciate it.
Mark, before we get into Saints, news broke up a little over an hour ago. John Harbaugh out in Baltimore. I told this to Charlie, and watching that game, whoever lost, you had a feeling they weren't going to be the head coach of either one of those two teams. The loser, he wasn't going to survive. I think sometimes you just run out of time, and, you know, it sort of maybe stale, but man, you think about what Harbaugh did, 18 years, 180 wins in the regular season. Yeah. He wins you a title. Okay, you 13 and 11 in postseason. Bashotti better damn well get him a guy that's better than Harbaugh if you're going to run him off.
Yeah, you know, there's been reports coming out of there, and I don't know, you know, I mean, it's always where there's smoke, there's fire. So there's been reports about a little bit of dysfunction or a little bit of a headbutting between Harbaugh and the quarterback, Lamar Jackson. So I don't know what's true, what's not true, but it certainly seems like something went down this year. It was a little bit different. So I think all those things are, you know, probably on the table. And listen, John Harbaugh, I don't know if he'll take a year off. I don't know where he sits right now, but I guarantee you one thing. There's probably five teams that have called that. Hey man, are you interested in come coaching our team right now? You know, so it'll be really interesting. New voice there with the Baltimore Ravens, but man, what a unbelievable run! That's, you know, 180 games. That's ten games a season that he's won while the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens on average. So unbelievable run. Good for him. And we'll see what happens.
I hope Arthur Blank don't have his number. To be honest with you, I don't want to see him in Atlanta. In watching the Saints, and you know the way the season ended. And I think for every team, when you're starting to rebuild, and that's what this team is in the rebuild stage, you're always looking for a couple tackles. You got them, okay? Kelvin Banks Jr., yeah. What he did at left tackle. I think Fuaga's right tackle spot, man, he's good there. You got you your pass rusher in Chase Young, and you got you your quarterback. And I think those are so big pieces of the puzzle when you're trying to get this together. And hopefully Eric McCoy can come back healthy, because he gives you the man in the middle at center. You've done a number of the Saints games, and watching him at the end, what he was able to do with this almost looked like a preseason game with the offensive weapons around him and what he had up front to protect him. You can't come away and not be impressed with Tyler Shough.
No, well, there's no question about that. And then, you know, you talk about the, like, it was like, you know, being kids in the neighborhood and trying to drum up a Nerf football game. Like, you just knocking on doors going, anybody want to come play with us? We're going to play Nerf football. You know, I mean, it was like the guys they had. And it was funny because, you know, he had missed a couple of throws. He missed a couple of throws to the kid. Oh, gosh, what was his name? I flush the names right when I'm done.
Kevin Austin.
Game, but. It was the other kid, number 85. Was it Bell or whatever the kid?
Yeah, Ronnie Bell. Ronnie Bell.
Yeah, Ronnie Bell. Ronnie Bell. And then he missed a couple of throws, and just you know, I mentioned on the broadcast, time on task. And then he hits him late in that game after he had missed two or three of them. Perfect throw. He played his butt off, man. That quarterback is legit, you know. And I understand that. You know, they got into the interception late in that game. Great defensive play, and tip your cap to D. Alford for making that play. But yeah, you've solved it. Now you need to upgrade your offensive line. Your guard positions need to be upgraded. I think Fortin did a pretty good job. You got to figure out what your running back situation is, and all that. But man, I'm really impressed with what Tyler Shough has become. And like I said to you guys on many different occasions, he is no question the best quarterback out of this last draft class. And it's not close, I don't believe. And then I'm really impressed with Kellen Moore, even though he's a Boise State guy. I'm still I have a lot of respect for what he was able to accomplish. And I love the direction that Mickey Loomis and the rest of the people, Randy Mueller and all those guys over there, the direction they're taking that franchise in. They're doing it the right way. They're going to build it, you know, the right way, and it certainly looks like they found their QB.
Mark, because there are some moments in a game you say, oh, Juwan Johnson at tight end. He'll drop an easy pass, or, you know, he had to fumble against Atlanta, and then he makes an unbelievable catch. You see, you know, he's in the top seven or eight of the tight ends and receptions and yards and everything else. Your thoughts on Juwan Johnson and seeing him as he's maturing in this league, going from being what you want to call a big receiver to now sort of a flex tight end.
Yeah. And I'm a big Juwan guy. Like I think he's done a phenomenal job transitioning, and he's not, you know, a trained killer out there blocking people, but he's a willing participant. Like he's not afraid to mix it up and get in there. And he's from a receiving standpoint, you know, I know a lot of people are in love with Kyle Pitts, but I wouldn't spend money on Kyle Pitts. I think Juwan does a much better job in the blocking game, and he's a dynamic receiver. And so I really like what he has become, you know, and there's been work there as a, you know, undrafted free agent out of Oregon wide receiver. It took years of transitioning, you know, years of working on a skill set, and I'm really impressed with him. And you know, he was the only kind of go-to guy they had on that offense, because everybody else was coming off the practice squad. So I'm impressed with what he's been able to the way he's been able to progress in his career.
One of the best coaching jobs this year, and we didn't see it early, but boy, we saw it late. Brandon Staley. And not everybody's built for the big room to be the head coach, but man, how he's got this unit. And you know, there's a lot of other pieces he's got to add to the puzzle. But doing it with older players like a Cam Jordan, Davin Godshaw, DeMario Davis, and then he's got all these rookies in Quincy Riley and Jonas Sanker and a second-year guy, certainly with Kool-Aid McKinstry. And, man, that defense played damn good down the stretch, Mark.
They certainly did. And it's funny because I talked to Brandon about it, you know, about getting another opportunity to be a head coach and what he's learned and, you know, all those things. And one of the things he said to me was, and I talked about it on the broadcast, is like, man, I really have become more demanding of my players. And, you know, I think when you first get that opportunity, you're trying to build relationships and you're trying to, you know, make it, you know, I want to be everybody's best friend or whatever. And man, he is not that way. He's like, man, I want, you know, I want guys to be held accountable. I want to challenge them. I want to demand a ton from them. And, you know, he did that. The other thing is he walks in there and the first conversation he has with Cam Jordan was Cam was like, hey, man, you know, they moved me inside last year and I don't want to play inside. That's not where I play. He goes, hey, man, guarantee you're going to be outside. You're going to do the things that you do well. And look at what Cam Jordan did in year 15, 10 sacks or whatever he had. He was amazing. And then the complete player that Chase Young has become. Chase Young, you know, it was just not quite there. Like, he'd show flashes but lack consistency, lack the run game, you know, and a passion for the run game. Chase Young just, I mean, the way he played on Sunday, man, he was a dominant, dominant figure. And I'm just proud of that kid, you know, because he came in, as such a highly touted guy, one rookie, you know, defensive rookie of the year, then the injury, the ACL, and he just really has taken some time to work and grow in confidence and all that stuff. And I think Brandon Staley really challenged him, and that's one of the reasons he grew and he became such a dominant player.
Inside of Calls with Mark Schlereth, brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Charlie?
Mark, it's actually a fun point. Before I get into the playoff preview, the stuff about Chase Young, I think I remember we've been talking to you for a couple of years now. When Chase Young was on the 49ers, you had kind of highlighted in that playoff push that even despite the 49ers winning some games, that opposing offenses were scheming up to run straight at him and challenging him to stop the run game. And I think that's maybe one of the underrated things that he improved in this year was that he wasn't a negative in rush defense. He was able to hold his own and really kind of attack the rushing game on top of his excellent performance as far as 10 sacks and basically 12 games played as a pass rusher. So his evolution has been something to really behold. And I think it's money well spent. The Saints have him locked down for another 2 years at, I think, around 17 average annual value for a solid edge rusher like Chase Young. Once again, I think it's money well spent.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. And he's, yeah, I just gave him before the game, I saw him and, you know, just a big old hug. First off, the dude is ginormous,
right,
man. That dude is the predator. Like, I had forgotten how big he is. I'm like, son of a gun. You know, when he was playing with Washington and he tore his ACL, he and I have had, you know, several different encounters over the years, and I just tried to help mentor him. And, you know, one of the things I told him when he was coming back from the ACL is, you know, when you're injured like that, you've got to reestablish your new 100%. And it may be 80% of what you used to be, but you've got to be able to go, that's my new 100%, and it's plenty good enough to go out here and whip ass. And you've got to be able to mentally get over that hurdle. And so we're talking about that, and he goes, dude, like 100% right. But he goes, man, I got to tell you, finally, I feel like mentally I've overcome it, and I don't think about it anymore, and I'm not, you know. And so it's cool to watch a kid mature like that and then to be a dominant player and to get challenged by Staley to say, hey, man, you know what, there is more to your game and you don't even realize it. And then to challenge him and to push him in that direction, I thought it's just really cool to watch. And like I said, Sunday, man, that dude was a dominant performer, dominant.
Mark, you were one of two people that told me in August, watch out for the Jaguars, mm-hmm. You and Pete Jenkins. Pete had went work with their defensive line. And your thoughts this weekend, Buffalo Jaguars. And, man, if I'm Buffalo, you know, finally I don't have to face Mahomes, okay? He's not there anymore. But then you got the young kids, okay, walking down the block for the first time, so to speak. And what a great job Leon Cohen's done. Your thoughts on Buffalo-Jacksonville?
Yeah, you know, I think this is probably, going into the playoffs, the worst Buffalo team that Josh Allen has taken in the playoffs. And, you know, I mean, the thing about them is they don't defend the run. Defensively, they've got some issues. They, you know, they've played down to the competition. You know, ultimately, too often, in my opinion, they just throw it to Josh Allen and go, hey, Superman, go win us a game. And you know what? He's capable of doing that. I think you're facing in Jacksonville the one team in the AFC right now is playing better than anybody else. It's playing the most complete football offensively, defensively, and special teams. And it's shown, man. In their last 4 or 5 weeks, they've been winning on an average of like 19 points a weekend. And they came here to Denver and put 34 on Denver and basically gave them a butt whipping here at home. And so, and that's a damn good defense here in Denver. So I think they're playing pretty much better than any team in the AFC right now. And, you know, it's just going to be, can Josh Allen hoist that team on his shoulders like he's done so many times before and lead them to a victory? If I'm a gambling man, and I'm not, but if I had to put money on it, I'd put money on Jacksonville to win this thing.
And if we see it, part three, Green Bay, Chicago. And, man, the first two games were terrific. If you just if you don't have a dog in the match, so to speak, man, you love to watch those type games. And Caleb showed some magic there. And the Packers and all the buildup. And then they on a one-month losing streak now and has kind of hit the skids since the injury to Micah Parsons. Your thought on the Saturday game between Green Bay and Chicago?
Yeah, I mean, listen – Green Bay, can you stop that running game of Chicago? Because that running game of Chicago is legit. And that, to me, is what they do. They do so well. You know, my big thing when you're talking about Caleb Williams is on schedule, I think Caleb Williams has been, you know, inconsistent at best. But off schedule and his ability to hold on to the ball and scramble around and do all those things, he's exceptional. And, man, I heard people talk about generational talent, and then I went and looked at, you know, film of him coming out of college, and I was like, eh, whatever, you know. But to watch him scramble around and make throws, I mean, he's big time that way. I think the biggest thing about the Chicago Bears is, you know, easier said than done. You got to shut down the run because that's what they do the best. And then you got to make Caleb Williams play quarterback in a traditional sense. If you start bringing pressure and try to heat him up and allow him to break contain and allow him to make people miss in the backfield, you're going to be in for a long day because that's when they go into scramble drill mode and they're as good as anybody I've watched this year in scramble drill mode.
Mark, your thoughts on the Monday Night Football kind of cap off to Wild Card Weekend, the Texans at the Steelers. I saw some stats about how the Steelers are just incredible on Monday Night Football at home under Coach Tomlin, but this Texans defense, I mean, the Texans' real second half surge after a terrible start has maybe been a little bit underreported, but they're red hot entering the postseason. One thing I noticed is that, you know, people talk about how often do defenses try to kind of fool opposing offenses with different coverage looks or blitzing or different blitz packages, everything like that. The Texans have the guys on that defense to just line up the ball and just punch you in the mouth. And I think it's going to be a real fun matchup. You know, the Steelers are getting back DK Metcalf for this game after the suspension that almost, you know, forced them to miss the playoffs. Is that major of a suspension there? But the Texans defense is one of those units that I don't think really anyone in the AFC wants to see in the playoffs. Pittsburgh gets them first up.
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants to play the Houston Texans. And you know, Will Anderson doesn't try to just win. He just tries to humiliate you. And they're violent. And then the guy probably nobody talks about, maybe one of the best players, he's one of the most undervalued, underrated players in football, is Danielle Hunter. That dude has 15 sacks and didn't get voted into the Pro Bowl. And what are we doing? Like, what are we doing? And that dude is incredible. Incredible. And so defensive front-wise, Toji Ai is unbelievably skilled and really just solid nose tackle that eats up blockers and allows their linebackers, Toa Toa and Alshire, to just run around and make tackles. Athletically, they are phenomenal. They are fast. They are violent. Their two corners are as good. I think if I was putting out the best tandem of corners in football, it would go to the Houston Texans. Lassiter has just been ridiculously good. And we know how good Stingley is as well. And then you throw in Petrie playing the nickel position, and that dude is a phenomenal football player. So I just think this defense, they don't have to try to trick you. They just line up and say, come get a taste. Like, you good enough? And they're damn good. Them and the Seattle Seahawks are playing phenomenal defense right now. So I think the Houston Texans in the AFC, quite frankly, are probably the one team that nobody might admit it, but everybody sits there and thinks, man, I'd like to be able to avoid those guys going forward.
Mark, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. You did a great job covering the NFL during the regular season, but man, that's something special. You know, when you hit, you know, the first round of playoffs, and then the second round is normally where you get some unbelievable games. But you and Chris Myers, Jim, y'all did a great job covering the NFL this year, and really appreciate it.
I appreciate you guys, man. Take care. We'll talk to you.
Thanks, Mark.
All righty. That was our Odyssey NFL Insider, Mark Schlereff, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. Mark is also the host of the Odyssey original, the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He told you he's got a little bit of bleed over from Saints Falcons, and you can download that now if you want to listen to it. Remember to listen to the Stinkin' Truth podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. When we come back, it'll be our triple option feature, myself along with Charlie Long, Steve Geller, right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike DeTillo along with Charlie Long, Steve Geller, our triple option feature. I get asked about this a lot. A couple of weeks back, we talked about it. You know, who the Saints would pick, and my thing was Jeremiah Love, a running back from Notre Dame. I think you know, he would be a great fit in this offense as a runner receiver. My comp certainly would be Bijan Robinson. So someone asked me, what happens if, you know, he gets selected ahead of time? Some of the guys that potentially could be there, and they brought up Jordan Tyson to me, and I'm a big fan of Jordan. I think he's a terrific football player, the best route runner in this draft class. But for people putting him in the top 10, they don't know his medical history.
Right.
I would have to go to my team doctors and say, tell me what's happened here. He had a major knee injury in 2023, a major one, when he was at Colorado. And he's had a history now of these soft tissue injuries, the hamstring, the calf injury. I remember Jen Hale telling us that she did the Arizona State game. He was basically kind of 75%. I think he caught 11 passes in that game for like 90-something yards. The medicals is what would be my biggest concern for Jordan Tyson. For a lot of people, it's copy and paste. I saw it on the internet, so I'm going to write about it. With Jordan Tyson's nothing to do with talent. He is really gifted. But the medical history, and you're going to hear about it. You hear about it from me. You're going to hear about it from others. As it gets closer, it's going to be an issue with him, and that is going to be something that is going to be looked at very closely if you picking in that top 10. He's worthy of a top 10 pick talent-wise, and he would be my number one receiver. But, again, that but comes in. That situation with the surgeries he's had, also the lower leg issues that he's had, is going to be a big concern. The other guy I really love is David Bailey, the edge rusher from Texas Tech. All he did this year was 52 tackles, 19.5 tackles for losses, and 14.5 quarterback sacks. And he was double-teamed. Texas Tech sent me a thing, 71% of the time. And those are the numbers he put up. David Bailey's a bad-to-the-bone dude. I mean, he is bad-to-the-bone. Started out at Colorado, and, man, you see his explosiveness and speed. So I think Jeremiah Love would be a great fit, and I get the question, if he's not there, where do you look? Maybe Cornell Tate. He's never really been a number one. Not with Jeremiah Smith on the other side. Yeah, you're never going to see double team work there. And he's a big receiver. So those are some of the names there. But when people talk to you about Jordan Tyson, are they telling you about his injury record? That's going to be a major question mark for Jordan as he hits the National Football League.
Mike, I remember we talked about Jordan Tyson after we had interviewed Sam Levitt.
Exactly.
At the Manning Passing Academy. And you made a comp, and I'm almost certain you remember this, but I remember it. because I haven't been able to get it out of my head. Every time I watch Jordan Tyson play, Emeka Ebuka was your comp for him.
Exactly, it's just like him.
They're like carbon copies of each other. And we just saw the rookie campaign that Emeka Ebuka put out there. I know that he kind of tapered off towards the end of the year, but a lot of that was due to the fact that Baker Mayfield also tapered off as well. So Ebuka, if you watch his tape and watch Jordan Tyson's tape, it's a lot of similarities. Both were super polished route runners, you know, getting ready for the draft. But like you said, if a team in the top 10 and maybe even upwards of top 6 decides we're okay with his medicals, he's been given the green light, he's been given the clear, he might not be there at 8. But we'll have to see. As far as David Bailey goes, Mike, I think he's a demon for one. But also, there's like that core of maybe 3 edge rushers, and depending on what you want to do with Arvell Reese, that are going to go in the top 10 of this year's draft. And this is just kind of early prep because we're still 3 months away and we have the Senior Bowl and Combine and everything going on. But Reese, Reuben Bain from Miami, and then also David Bailey from Texas Tech are the names that you should get to know if you want an edge rusher with that first pick.
Arvell Reese is a freak.
He's a
athlete.
He's a stud.
Unbelievable. And he's just scratched the surface.
Yeah.
But you would think he's going to Arizona, huh?
Man,
Arizona's in a bad spot because they need a quarterback, and now you're looking at the
top 2
picks.
Yeah, so where do you go?
Right.
Do you make the move to jump up? Because now, if I'm Dante Moore, and okay, I feel Fernando Mendoza is going to go to the Raiders. You think I want to end up in New York?
No.
Man, what? I might tell him, hey, guys, man, it's been fun, but somebody else better trade up for me. But Arvell Reese, when he's going to work out, he is a freak of nature as a football player. And they used him as an off-ball linebacker. My thing is, put your hand in the – rush the quarterback. Play sick him. And do like Micah Parsons. Go after the quarterback at that point. That's not what Ohio State did with him. They didn't do that with them at all. So those are just some of the names. We're going to go through a lot of these particular deals. And also free agency certainly will kind of beckon the call on exactly who the Saints pick. Steve?
Mike, I guess continuing with triple option, I'm going to go more in with draft stuff and the Saints. And just curious what you think of a guy. You know, not many folks are talking about safety for the Saints right now and looking at another Ohio State guy and Caleb Downs. Would you think he'd be a viable pick at number 8?
What? Man, okay.
If he's there.
You wouldn't have to ask me twice.
Okay.
I'd have that dude running to the table. I'd say, that's who I want. Now, again, safeties and running backs get devalued.
Right.
If you had to do this draft over again a few years back, look what Kyle Hamilton's done for the Ravens. He's not as big as Kyle, because Kyle looks like a tight end the way he's built. But Caleb, when he stepped on that football field the first time, first game I saw him at University of Alabama, I'm like, whoa, that dude's a freshman? He was whipping people's butt and taking names back then. Then he goes to Ohio State. He's great against the run. I think you've seen them use him more in the coverage part of the game this year than, say, his first year at Alabama and his first season at Ohio State, where he was sort of a hybrid guy, where he played up to the – man, he pop you. Man, he is a big-time hitter. But it's going to – the intrigue with this draft is going to be the 2 outliers, Jeremiah Love on offense because of him playing that position, Caleb Downs playing defense at safety. And how do you value them in what you're trying to piece together? No, Caleb Downs, man, he – I think you talk about instant impact guy, he's that.
Yeah.
And so is Love on offense.
I just, Mike, that safety position to me is still one of need for this defense.
What? They got a lot of positions of need. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
They filled some, but, you know, offensive guard, wide receiver, tight end. You could add another one because so much 12 personnel. Running back, another defensive lineman, another linebacker, another corner. Safety. Right. You can kind of go down the list. Caleb Downs, man, Steve, to answer your question, I'd have no problems with Caleb Downs if he wore the black and gold. We'll be back to finish it off here on our number 2 of Sports Talk right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglio along with Charlie Long, Steve Geller. Steve and Charlie come back in the 6 o'clock hour. They'll be talking more NFL draft information. Justin Mello joins them, who covers the NFL draft, does a really good job. And at 7 o'clock, Mike Haas, bunch of great guests on the Saints Hour right here on the Big 870 WWL.